VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we do thank you for joining us on Crosstalk here on VCY America. Ladies and gentlemen, just before we get to our guest today, we want to make a correction to yesterday's broadcast. Yesterday, we aired an audio clip during the afternoon broadcast from Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla at the World Economic Forum. We had received this clip from a variety of sources that actually had gone viral and seems to purport to claim that it was their dream to reduce the world population by 50% by 2023. Well, following yesterday's program, it was brought to our attention initially by one of our listeners that this clip had been deceptively edited to make it appear he was speaking of reducing the population in numbers, when in fact the whole statement he refers to reducing by 50% the number of people in the world who could not afford their medicine. So I want to have you hear that correct quote here today.
I think that it's really a fulfillment of a dream that we had together with my leadership team when we started in 19. The first week we met in January of 19 in California and to set up the goals for the next 5 years. And one of them was by 2023, we will reduce the number of people in the world that cannot afford our medicines by 50%. I think today this dream is becoming a reality.
So as I mentioned, the clip that aired yesterday coming to us from a variety of sources and some that we have trusted, deceptively edited when sent out and was not caught until after yesterday's program initially by one of our listeners. So we thank them for bringing it to our attention and we certainly apologize for its airing, but certainly we're determined to set the record straight. And now, ladies and gentlemen, to our topic for today, and it is not fake or deceptively edited. It is the World Health Organization, the International Health Regulations, and the forthcoming pandemic treaty. Information you need to know going forward. And joining us here is Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel. Matt's a constitutional attorney. They've got, under his belt are hundreds of published legal opinions. He's authored a number of scholarly law review publications, written books. He's filed numerous briefs on all level of courts, even appearing before the U.S. Supreme Court, where he had a unanimous victory earlier this year. But, Matt, we'd like to welcome you back here to Crosstalk.
Thank you, Jim. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Let's first discuss what happened last week at the World Health Organization or the World Health Assembly. I mean, the week prior, we had both Alex Newman on a program, as well as former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann warning about amendments from the Biden administration directly attacking the sovereignty of our nation. While it seemed the U.S. was ready to surrender sovereignty, other nations were not there. So, Matt, tell us what happened.
Well, it was a resounding defeat for Joe Biden because he proposed 13 amendments to the WHO's International Health Regulations, or IHR is what they're called for short, and all 13 of those failed. That is a staggering defeat because he thought he would be able to push these forward and get these amendments. These are amendments to a 2005 International Health Regulation that George W. Bush initiated with the United States and the WHO, and these would be amendments to that. Now, the 2005 regulations that are already in place that go back to George W. Bush are bad. They're like what you have, for example, in these states, where states had all these powers to declare these states of emergency, and we allowed these states to do that, not knowing that they would take it and abuse it. And you know, these states of emergency we've lived with, whether it's a flood, a fire, a hurricane, tornado, whatever it might be, and they've been temporary, they've been localized. But then when the COVID pandemic happened, these governors used extraordinary powers under those same laws. Well, you have that latent in this 2005 document, this agreement. But what Biden's hope was is that he wanted to give 13 additional amendments to it that would give extraordinary more power to the WHO, particularly vesting it in one individual, the Director General Tedros.
He is one that has a pretty shady background when you look at it as well, and not a medical doctor.
No, he's not a medical doctor. Ted Ross, actually, the foreign ministry of Ethiopia has asked the WHO to investigate his past, because when he was in Ethiopia, before he became the head of the WHO, he was also part of a revolutionary group, a very violent organization, to overthrow parts of the Ethiopian government. Wow. And his group sanctioned punishing media that would print anything negative against their terrorist organization movement.
That sounds familiar.
That's Tedros.
Yeah, that sounds very familiar with tactics being taken recently.
It is, yeah. And so, you know, this guy is very much in favor of suppression of free speech, and he is very much in favor of control. He's obviously indebted to China. He carried the water bucket for communist China on two different occasions, at least. The first one is when China said, well, there is no evidence that COVID-19 can be transmitted human to human. So the WHO came out and said, yeah, there's no evidence that it can be transmitted human to human. A month later, in early 2020, that was proven obviously false. Mm-hmm. The second thing is when they did this so-called investigation of the origin of COVID-19, they used the same Chinese government narrative, and that is that the COVID virus started in a wet market as opposed to in the Wuhan Institute of Virology, which was conducting gain-of-function research. And so the WHO came out, and they just parroted that as well. Well, now we find that that's false as well, that it's most likely to have originated in this gain-of-function facility in Wuhan that was actually funded through monies coming originally from the NIH under the leadership of Dr. Fauci. So that's the kind of a history of these problematic, really carrying the water, if you will, for communist China, and also for Bill Gates. Bill Gates is one of the biggest funders, if not the biggest funder, certainly the largest private funder of the WHO. In 2021, when President Trump said he was going to withdraw from the WHO, Gates said, don't worry about it. I'll just personally write a check to make up the United States contribution, which was a couple hundred million dollars. In fact, from January to September of 2021, Bill Gates paid the WHO personally through his foundations $750 million. So these stakeholders, private funders, Bill Gates, communist China, he's sympathetic, that is to say, Ted Ross is sympathetic to communist China, and the pharmaceutical companies, those are all stakeholders. Those are all entities that have significant, enormous influence in the WHO. And the WHO then would be empowered to declare. And here's the thing. This is what Biden wanted to do. He wanted to give the WHO power to declare public health emergencies anywhere in the world. And if the nation state, including the United States, had a public health emergency declared by the WHO, even if the nation state disagreed with it, or you presented facts to say, oh, there is no public health emergency here, notwithstanding, this single individual still had the power to declare a public health emergency and then issue various directives to the state, the nation, as well as other nations to address the issue. And some of those would include not just public health emergencies that you would normally think of, such as diseases and viruses, because Biden's 13 amendments actually included environment, animal rights, and other kinds of things. And so you can clearly see that the WHO would be able to declare a public health emergency over, quote, climate change, close quote. And in fact, the WHO's already said that climate change poses the greatest public health threat to the people on the planet. That's the greatest public health threat that we face, they say. So if you had climate change issues, the WHO could be involved in dictating how the governments should operate. If you had diseases or pandemics, even if they weren't really pandemics or diseases that were posing risk to public health, the WHO could be involved and issue directives. What about access to abortion?
This is a big fight for the Biden administration here, is abortion access. That we keep hearing that mantra, abortion is healthcare, when we know it's not, Matt. But this is something that they could utilize to, again, declare their emergency dictatorial powers.
Yeah, we all know they use the euphemism reproductive health care, and that they put that in the context of, you know, public health. And so when you have Roe v. Wade overruled, hopefully in the next few weeks, with the official release of this opinion from the Supreme Court. And then you have many of these states blocking abortion, stopping abortion, severely restricting abortion. Well, the WHO could come in and say the lack of access to abortion, including the lack of access to abortion because people can't afford it, therefore the government should fund it. So it's not only access, but funding is a public health emergency, and the United States needs to remedy that immediately. We can talk about how they can enforce this, but that's a question people will have. How can this actually be enforced, and is this a treaty? We can get into that, but the good news is for now, the 13 amendments that Biden proposed to give this extraordinary power to the WHO to declare these public health emergencies globally and then impose these directives, that those amendments failed. However, it's not over yet because they have a meeting coming up in June. They have two tracks that they're pursuing. One track is the new pandemic treaty track.
Matt, just
before... entirely new pandemic treaty.
Yeah, and just before we go down that road, I just want to point out something else as well, and that is, you know, things like gun violence has been declared a public health emergency, so our Second Amendment could be wrapped up into this as well. Am I taking that too far?
No, you're absolutely right. The Second Amendment issues, gun violence, access to, you know, different kinds of weapons or any weapons, all of that could be declared a public health emergency. Mm-hmm. So from guns to climate change to some kind of disease or pandemic or virus or abortion or you name it, animal rights issues and so forth, because they actually have a section in there where they're coordinating under the Biden amendments with different animal rights organizations. That's not currently in the 2005 amendments or IHR, but it was in the Biden proposed amendment. So it's very, very far reaching what he wanted to do.
And there's one more thing I want to hit before we talk about what's coming down the road for us, and that is the Biden administration sent these amendments, I think it was January 18th of this year, and while they're very vocal on some things, I mean, we know where they stand on guns, we know where they stand on abortion, we know where they stand on transgenderism, they kept this under wrap for nearly 3 months.
They did. They secretly released these to the United Nations WHO, but they did not notify members of Congress, and they did not notify the public, and they released them on January 18th. Then a researcher discovered them at the end of March, April of this year, and made them public. They then had to briefly publicize them, and they did it on May the 6th. But you could not comment because you had to actually see the publicized notification within 24 hours. But even if you saw it within 24 hours, you had to be recognized among a certain recognized minority group. And if you didn't meet that criteria of being a certain recognized minority and you didn't do it within 24 hours, you couldn't comment. Obviously, they wanted to hold this from the public. Mm-hmm. This is a big agenda for them. And you're right, they're very vocal about what they're doing in other areas. They were very silent here. So when we started messaging on this and others like Michelle Bachmann and members of Congress were completely caught off guard, they didn't know anything about it. Fortunately, some members of Congress started to become very active, like last week. The Freedom Caucus opposed it. Some senators, some governors did, and then it began to catch on worldwide.
Folks, we're going to take a quick break. Matt Staver with us from Liberty Council. LC.org is their website. And when we come back, we're going to find that this door is not closed, only delayed for now, because there is more to come on the IHR amendments and more to come with this pandemic treaty. So stay with us. We'll be back in a minute here on Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, geologist and president of the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, do creationists say that the biblical flood laid down all the fossils?
No, we don't, Chris. Now, we do think that the flood of Noah's day is responsible for most of the fossils in geologic strata, but certainly not all. We talk about a time of residual catastrophism after the flood, which included the Ice Age. During this time, a lot of fossils were formed. Ice Age fossils would typically lie on top of the flood fossils, which came earlier. Now, of course, there are some fossils being formed today in minor catastrophes, minor floods, minor tsunamis. But these are of local extent, not like the fossils in strata from the flood. Chris, the biblical story of Noah's flood is absolutely essential for a full creation understanding. Let's go back to Genesis and get it right.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
Friends, you're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Constitutional attorney Matt Staver is with us today. And yes, we're talking about the World Health Organization. We're talking about the amendments that were passed and went before the committee as well. We're talking also about this pandemic treaty, and there are things down the road. Matt, we understand, though, the Biden administration had this huge defeat last week, that the battle's not over, the door's not closed, it's only delayed because there are future meetings coming up pertaining to the international health regulations, that's the IHR, as well as the proposed new pandemic treaty. And in the last segment, you started telling us about this new pandemic treaty, and did you mention a date coming up in June?
Yeah, there's two different tracks that they're pursuing. So even though we won this huge victory last week, because it'd be terrible to have these 13 amendments actually applicable right now, good thing is they're not, but they're still pursuing two tracks, and they're doing it at the same time. The first meeting that's coming up next is June 16 through 17. It's a smaller group, but that particular meeting is regarding people who, different nation representatives who would speak or submit written statements regarding the new pandemic treaty. There's actually a new pandemic treaty that is in the process of being drafted. That actually started in November and December of 2021, and it's all because of COVID. They argue that if the WHO had greater international enforcement authority, then they would have been able to have a global management of COVID-19, and we would all be living happily ever after. Right. That's their essential narrative.
Yeah, I got a bridge to sell you, too.
Yeah, then on August 1 is the actual working draft of the new pandemic treaty. That will be submitted, so we'll see exactly what's in it. We don't know everything that's in it, but we do know that they have been calling for increased enforcement authority globally. So we know that that's going to be in it. This will then be, no doubt, presented at the next World Health Assembly meeting, which will be next May 2023. So that's where they're headed. That's one track, the pandemic treaty. The other track is they've already got these international health regulations, so they want to amend them, like Biden tried to do. So they've got other meetings coming up. September 30 is the proposed the deadline for giving amendments to the IHR. October 1, the Director General is to convene a committee to make technical recommendations to these proposals. And on November 15, they have this new working group that's in existence, and that's one thing that came out of last week's meeting. They have a new working group on IHR, or International Health Regulation amendments. They will meet to consider all these amendments. So mid-November, that's when they're going to meet. Then they meet again in January, and then you have the May 2023 presentation of these new amendments at the 76th Annual World Health Association meeting.
So, Matt, with this meeting coming up then on September 30th for all these amendments, could we see the Biden administration just resubmit all of these?
Oh, yeah, no question. And you can bet that the Biden administration is trying to pressure some of these countries that had objections. Some countries, like some of the African countries, had some objections to the IHR amendments, but not necessarily to the substance of the amendments. They objected because they wanted all the amendments and the treaty considered at one time rather than piecemealing this situation. Mm-hmm. And some, not all of the African countries, so there's some division there, they seem to want Tedros in control so that they can get universal health care. And they want the WHO to impose universal health care globally so that they can get that in their nation, which they can't get right now. And essentially, it's a mechanism to be able to get what they can't currently get through their own, you know, political process.
Well, folks, talking about one world government, I mean, here it is. Matt, these international health regulations will come before them once again. And we know that people here in the last couple of weeks really have been speaking out to their senators and the congressmen. That should really not let up, should it?
No, it should not let up. You should still reach out to them, because there's two different kinds of members of Congress. Well, there's three. There are those that just, probably really two. There's one, the first kind, and this is what we encountered when we began messaging. They just didn't know. They were completely clueless, and that was by design. Biden wanted to bypass them and not let them know. They had no idea about any of this going on. So they ended up investigating, and some of them began to speak out, and that was very good. you know, Governor Ron DeSantis spoke out and some senators spoke out. The Freedom Caucus members of the House began speaking out, and other individual members of Congress began speaking out. That's one kind of group. So contact your governors as well as your members of the House and Senate. Second group is a group, and this is on both sides. This would be Democrats and Republicans. And that group is, well, we like the WHO. It's a pretty good deal to have the WHO because that would help us all to manage things such as these pandemics. So even from some Republicans, I mean, some of the people on our email list and that have followed Liberty Council, they communicated with their members of Congress, and they would write back this long, flowery language that was pretty much meaningless. But at the bottom line, they concluded they don't have any problem with the WHO. Some of them, they discounted. Others discounted, well, no, the WHO's just not going to be able to have that kind of authority. In other words, they're completely uneducated about right. the United Nations authority and their ability to be able to force compliance with some of these agreements.
Yeah, governing with ignorance or legislating with ignorance. Matt, WND.com is reporting that at the conclusion of the World Health Organization meetings last week, that they're reporting that Communist China was elected to the World Health Organization's executive board. Do you have any knowledge of that?
I don't have any specific knowledge of that, but I have heard of it. I haven't been able to confirm that yet. However, it would not surprise me at all. Within the WHO delegation, I should say within the WHO leadership, Communist China is a big player. And that's why you have, and you know, we just like would just be aghast at that. But for people like Tedros and other people in the high leadership of mm-hmm. the WHO, they are very ideologically in line with Communist China, and mm-hmm. thus the reason why they were so willing to carry the water bucket of the Communist China narrative with respect to no human-to-human transmission, which was false, and that COVID-19 originated in a wet market as opposed to the Wuhan Institute of Virology.
You know, I want to point something out because this really strikes, in my opinion, Matt, at the credibility of the WHO. And also when I think about the whole, you know, aspect of the Wuhan coronavirus, we see what China has done. I mean, look what they've done in Shanghai and all of these people imprisoned in their high-rise apartments begging for food to come to them. And for them to be on the executive board would be very concerning to me. But, it's just kind of maddening in that regard as to the control, because we know what kind of control China has over their populace.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you would think that if you are really in interested in public health, that you would say something contrary to what Communist China is doing. You would speak up and you would speak against this individual human rights violations and just the inhumanity that Communist China has been and continues to show in Shanghai and other parts around China, where they're locking people in. I mean, some of those videos that I've seen of people, you can hear them crying and speaking out and calling for help from their high-rise apartments. In fact, there's even one drone where it's in Chinese, but we have people that translated that, and what it says is, essentially, contain your soul's desire for freedom. And that's what they were constantly flying around them. You know, basically, stop your quest for freedom.
Wow. Matt, there's another aspect to all of this and the empowered, you know, WHO in this, and that is we've seen this with COVID, the electronic digital vaccine passports. Now, this could actually be mandated by one organization, the WHO, on every nation. I mean, that's the kind of power they would have.
Absolutely. And in fact, this gets us into how the WHO can actually enforce this. But if you go back into March of this year, the WHO launched its international vaccine passport. They want that for travel and for other kinds of movement about, that you show this digitized vaccine passport, which is not just going to have COVID. Right now it's COVID-19 vaccine passport, but it's going to have other things, because once COVID is completely, you know, in our rearview mirror, you'll have other vaccines and other pandemics and other viruses and other things that you need to add on there, whether it's, you know, human papilloma vaccine or whatever it may be, the mm-hmm. flu vaccine. They're going to want to put all that on there. But they launched that, and as a result, there's a couple of continents that have already now signed on to it. And we're talking about, this covers a couple billion people already with these vaccine passports. And these vaccine passports will be used to control travel and movement. In fact, in Biden's amendments that he proposed, it would include within the WHO jurisdiction in terms of how they would enforce and impose their directives to other UN agencies. One UN agency that is over airline travel, another agency that is over shipping travel, which means that they could affect airline flights. They could impose this on shipping, which would include goods as well as food. There's all kinds of ways to be able to enforce this. And somebody says, well, you know, what if you have a – take Florida. Let's go back to Florida, August of 2020. Florida was wide open. Businesses were at 100%. Schools open to full occupancy, in-person service in August, September 2020. You know, New York governor didn't like it, so he imposed a quarantine requirement. If you're flying from Florida to New York, you had to quarantine for 14 days. Well, that would kill government. That would kill business kind of travel. So now if the WHO were in charge and they didn't like Florida doing that, or South Dakota that was wide open, they could say that's a public health emergency and the United States needs to take action. Mm-hmm. Well, number one, right now they would have a sympathetic voice with the Biden administration. Number two, they would have sympathetic voices and compliance with some of these other states, the terrible lockdown states, the worst ones. You know, they would say, well, we've got to enforce the WHO, and we're going to enforce it on people in Florida or South Dakota, whatever it might be. Beyond that, the WHO can also then drag the United States to the World Health Court for fines and other kind of penalties. And beyond that, they can affect our borders by these vaccine passports, by shipping, by air travel. They can also put pressure on other nations that are around the United States, as an example, in terms of border restrictions, vaccine passport restrictions, and those kinds of things. So there's all kinds of ways to be able to enforce this. Someone says, well, but this is not a treaty. It's not a treaty. You're right. And obviously in a treaty, you have to have a supermajority of the Senate to ratify it. But what we've seen over the past, like the World Trade Organization and NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Association, those are not treaties either. Those are what are considered congressional executive agreements. And in both of those, Congress voted on it, but it's just a simple majority, and it's not the supermajority that you need to ratify. And so that's how we got into these, and that's how we're under the WTO. And so, for example, the WTO, Canada and Mexico, they complained under that particular agreement that we were labeling countries of origin for certain meat. Mm-hmm. They didn't like that because people didn't want to buy meat, for example, from Mexico or some other place. And so they took us to the World Health Court. The United States lost, had to pay a big fine, and Congress had to go back and amend the law.
It's ridiculous. And folks, you know, the war that's going on and the tainted food products that are coming. And I mean, it's the world's food supply is at risk. We need to have country of origin labeled on our meat products, on our food products. We'll be back with some more discussion on related issues. Matt Staver with us from Liberty Council talking about the World Health Organization, the new pandemic treaty. Folks, there's more to come. Stay with us. This is Crosstalk.
Islam is on the rise all over the West, including America. In his compelling book, The Cross in the Shadow of the Crescent, author Erwin Lutzer believes that we have reached a tipping point. The spread of Islam is impacting the way we live, and this advancement of Islam poses a threat to our freedoms of speech and religion. But he says this time also offers Christians a powerful opportunity to share the gospel. In The Cross in the Shadow of the Crescent, Dr. Lutzer addresses several important issues, including the agenda that Islamists have for the West, how Islam's growing influence will affect you personally, and what the Church should be doing in response. He also gives a reminder that ultimately, the enduring truth of the cross will prevail. Copies of the book, The Cross in the Shadow of the Crescent, are available for a donation of $17 to VCY America by calling 1-800-729-9829 during regular office hours. Again, that number, toll-free, is 1-800-729-9829.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Matt Staver is with us from Liberty Council. Again, their website, lc.org. So thankful they're keeping on top of this. And, Matt, I know you've got, I believe you've got a special website set up for this, just keeping following stories on this topic, correct?
Yes, we do. It's lc.org/WHO. lc.org/WHO.
Yeah, and folks, check it out, and they're putting information up there as it develops. Keep in mind that there are dates coming up. I mean, this new pandemic treaty, you know, some of the outlines for this coming up on June 16th and 17th. We see the international health regulations next meeting on September the 30th. But, Matt, there's another interesting aspect to all of this, too, and it was a another story that had been seen of the CEO of MasterCard, Michael, and I believe it's pronounced Miebach, but reportedly told a panel at the World Economic Forum at the annual conference last week that central bank digital currencies may replace the global banking system SWIFT in as little as 5 years. And I thought, wow, wouldn't this really propel this world to a great reset and allow not only control over the, you know, the travel you talk about with health, but when you tie your currencies into this, that could be also very troubling.
Yeah, it could be, and no doubt would be. In fact, that's the direction they want to go. And you began to see some of that even during COVID, remember, where they didn't want you to use cash. They didn't want you to use hard money, whether it's coins or dollars or whatever, because it would transmit COVID. And so people in some stores weren't even accepting it. But
right.
Then the government was actually recommending not to use it. I think all this, whether it's COVID, which has been a big leverage tool that they've used to push forward this great reset, cashless society, the restrictions, the control, the globalization concentrated in the United Nations, particularly in the World Health Organization, all of that has been used as leverage because of COVID, and that's the direction they want to go. One of the things I think that COVID did in respect to that is it hopefully woke up many, many people to find out this agenda has been going on. It predated COVID. It'll be around long after COVID, but it's a very centralized control, one world government type of system agenda that also includes depopulation in order to bring down, you know, CO2 emissions and whatever reason they do, but it is a depopulation agenda as well.
Matt, there's one other thing that is kind of connected to this as well, and it's been reported that homosexual events are super spreaders of monkeypox. The WHO has previously admitted that the disease transmits through prolonged close contact, mainly, but not exclusively, among men who have these relationships with other men. And this is the same organization, WHO, who wanted the lockdowns with COVID and have given the go-ahead, though, now for gay pride events. Andy Seely, strategic advisor for the WHO Department of Global HIV, Hepatitis, and Sexually Transmitted Infectious Programs, said Tuesday of this week, it's important that people who want to go out and celebrate gay pride, LGBTQ plus pride, to continue to go and plan to do so. Most of these events and official events are outdoors or family friendly. We don't want to see any reason, a real reason, to be concerned about the enhanced likelihood of transmission in those contexts. I thought, my, oh, my, here is a group that wanted to shut everything down due to COVID, you know, first no and then yes, and now, but just giving full sanction, really, for what have been termed super spreader events for monkeypox to go forward.
Well, that goes to show you that they're really not interested in public health. This is an ideologically driven organization under the guise of public health emergencies. Public health emergencies is just a few words. It's a rhetoric. It is the terminology that ultimately empowers them to act. And it's now being, you know, what they want to do is localize that power in one individual to be able to have that unilateral authority across the globe. So when you look at this and you know that the CDC's done the same thing, they said the same thing in terms of how monkeypox is primarily spread, not exclusively, but one of the primary spreaders is, you know, men who have these sexual relations with other men. That's how it's being spread. And that's the primary mechanism. The WHO says the same thing. Well, you would think, well, if that's the way, then you need to have some kind of a directive to that effect. Stop doing that. Rather than, oh, just go on with your pride events in June, because you know what happens at those events? They're very sexually provocative and explicit, and it's going to be a cesspool in many places around the world for continual spread of whatever disease,
including
monkeypox.
Friends, our phone line here is open, 800-733-9829, 1-800-733-9829. We're talking about the World Health Organization. We're talking also about the international health regulations. We're talking about the pandemic treaty. There is much that is before us in the next 12 months on the advancement of these items. And so we invite your calls, 800-733-9829. Matt, as we're waiting for those first calls to come in, I understand that this disinformation board that had been put into place by the Biden administration and then pulled back the reins on this, it's re-energized once again. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. You know, you had the one person, Nina, Jankovic, she was the one who was the head. She was a very radical ideologue. And she ultimately caught the attention of people when this was announced, and she resigned. So they said, well, we're going to pause it. Well, they didn't pause it very long, because now they have appointed as the head even somebody who is more dangerous, and that's Michael Chertoff. More dangerous in the sense that he knows how to actually accomplish his agenda. And all you have to do is go back to look at some of the things that he's done and supported. First, he's co-authored the Patriot Act. And if you look at the Patriot Act, it greatly expanded government's authority to be able to surveil people and to eavesdrop on people, to wiretap people, including United States citizens. It authorized the CIA to be more involved in actually spying on American citizens. It also authorizes indefinite detention, despite any other kind of constitutional protections you might have. So you can be indefinitely detained. It's the same government that's indefinitely detaining some of these people from January 6th, and they're just holding them in a jail cell in Washington, D.C. So he has been very much involved in trying to develop ways to literally subvert the Constitution, our Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights, among other rights as well. And he also has been a very strong proponent of climate change is a national security threat. So when you look at when this initial announcement was made by the Biden administration's secretary, Alejandro Mayorkas, who's the head of the DHS, you find that they specifically said they wanted to have this up and running in time for the midterm elections to monitor and restrict, quote, disinformation and misinformation regarding the election and regarding COVID-19. So whether it's COVID-19, climate change, the elections, they want to monitor all that as a national security threat, and they want to censor it. And if you go back to the original time frame of this, on April the 12th, Barack Obama was speaking at Stanford University, and he was speaking about how the government should be involved at a greater extent to require social media to censor, quote, disinformation, and that was so necessary to save the democracy. That's his words. About 5-6 days later, this Department of Homeland Security Disinformation Governance Board was ultimately announced. We see the first person who wanted to use social media as a behavior change to modify people's views to be consistent with her and other people's liberal views. She then had to resign, but now you got Michael Chertoff, and we see his history. We know exactly where he's coming from. And he has more astuteness, if you will, more track record, more experience in actually accomplishing what this Biden administration wants to accomplish than the original person, Nina Jankovic.
Friends, danger ahead, danger ahead. And censoring, and this is something our guest mentioned yesterday from the National Vaccine Information Center, that they have been censored on so much of the social media, and that is only going to intensify. Lines are packed. Let's go to Roseanne in Port Charlotte, Florida. Roseanne, you're on the air.
How do you do?
Fine, thank you.
I just wanted to quickly warn every heterosexual woman who is saying the monkey virus can't affect me because I understand from what I just heard that it's transported through homosexual men. And I was married for 12 years, dated the boy. I was his virgin and...
Yep.
Never throughout the entire time knew that he was bisexual. I thought I was safe from all kinds of things, and This is a death threat to everyone. You just don't know sometimes. You just don't know. Yeah. Be careful.
Thank you for the call here. And though they said it's not exclusively transmitted this way, it is a close personal contact. We do know that that they've said that, you know, these have been super spreader events where this has come forth in this regard. So, Matt, it ought to be alarming to us.
Yes, it's very alarming to us, no doubt about it. And, you know, whatever it is, whether it's monkeypox or something like that, if you really had some real interest in public health, the CDC would be coming out and making these statements too. And the WHO would come out and make these statements. They wouldn't be encouraging this kind of perversity with the Pride events and so forth.
Yeah.
I mean, if you ever seen one of these, not all of them, but obviously many of them, they're very, very sexually provocative and, you know, outrageous in terms of what happens at some of these events.
Yeah. Let's go to Jim calling from Waukesha, Wisconsin. Jim, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, and thank you for having me. I just wanted to comment on WHO, UN taking over and our country's giving away our sovereignty on to them. The thing is that we've been talking about this as Christians, about a one world government, and we should be looking forward to this because this is what we've all been talking about that is supposedly to come to pass before the Lord comes back.
Yeah, you know, Jim, though, we don't know that time frame. I think I so often think about Nineveh, and because God has warned, destruction is going to come when people turn their back. But Jonah went and proclaimed in Nineveh, 40 days, Nineveh is going to be destroyed. But you know what? The people turned. They repented, turned back to God. Many people were saved. And who knows that this is not such a time as this? So we know God's ultimate plan is going to come. We don't know what time that is all coming together, but we are required to be faithful, Jim, and to cry out against wickedness, just as Jeremiah the prophet did too, and we need to speak out against that. So,
amen, amen.
Thank you, Jim.
Matt, I agree. I fully agree. I don't have anything to add, Jim. Yeah. I think you said it very well.
We've got Leticia calling in from Phoenix, Arizona. You're on the air.
Yes, I just wanted to know. You guys said to call your governor, House, and Senate, but what is it that we're supposed to tell them?
Great, good question.
About the who? Yeah, good question. Tell them to do everything in their power to stop America from ceding authority to the WHO. Frankly, I think we need to withdraw from the WHO. But they need to do everything in their power, whether it's what the Freedom Caucus did, where they made public statements, and some of these other members of Congress are making public statements, or whether it's defunding. They need to really raise the issue. And while they might not be able to get all the votes that they need between now and November, remember November, because they need, first of all, they need to hold the line between now and the not only November elections, but until the new Congress is seated in January. And then in January, you may have some additional members of the Senate and members of the House where you can actually get something done.
So again,
but in the meantime, they need to hold the line. Do everything in their power to oppose the WHO.
Yeah, and do not cede authority to the World Health Organization, and just getting that message across loud and clear is so good. Thank you for the call. We'll be back in just 1 minute with Matt Staver. Our number here, 800-733-9829.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. In November of 2021, a group known as NTI, Nuclear Threat Initiative, put out a report of a fake country that had an outbreak of monkeypox. And in the report, they said it would outbreak in May of 2022, May 15th, 2022, to be precise. Well, guess what? That's pretty much when we started hearing about monkeypox in the news overseas and now in America. They went on to describe the goal. The objective, give more power to the World Health Organization, which is China, which is also the biggest funder of WHO, reported to be Bill Gates. So do you want the UN, Bill Gates, and China running our healthcare system and telling us when there's an emergency and when we have to shut down our businesses and our churches and our schools and stay inside? If we don't fight this global tyranny, that's what's coming. They've already gamed it, and now it's being rolled out. For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House.
Friends, don't go back to sleep thinking, well, that World Health Organization stuff didn't pan out last week. It's all going to go away, because it's not. There's meetings coming up as soon as June 16th on the framework for this new pandemic treaty, with a draft coming out later after that. There is also the international health regulations with amendments to be offered by September 30th, with several dates beyond that as well. Many things culminating to next May for the World Health Organization. So don't go to sleep. Stay informed. And one way you can do so is keeping abreast at Liberty Counsel's website, lc.org/WHO. Who? Okay. And you'll be able to stay informed on those matters. Let's go to Mark in Newark, Ohio. Mark, you're on the air.
Well, I'm glad you told that person before about giving into the health organization, just saying, well, let's let it go and do that one world government thing. It also states in the Bible that we are supposed to be prudent and try to defend our rights and all that as Christians.
We reprove the works of darkness. We're to expose them, and that's certainly what we're doing. Yeah.
Right. And the second thing of all is national security. You said something about national security on an issue. I can't remember. I'm sorry, but what it was, I don't know how that could be a national security.
Oh yeah. Issue. Well, you and I don't understand that, but what they do is they say that this is a national security issue, and in fact, that's why they put this under the Department of Homeland Security. Threats to our homeland security, threats to our homeland. And so, who do they think are threats? Well, if you go back to the DHS under Barack Obama, Janet Napolitano thought that veterans are threats, people mm-hmm. that believe in the Second Amendment, those that are pro-life, those that have these strong patriotic views. Those are part of domestic terrorists. That's essentially what they're saying, that there are threats to the national security, and they include climate change, discussion about if you believe that the 2020 election was stolen, that's a threat to national security. All of these things, you know, if you say that ivermectin is a good option to take for COVID, or that the COVID shots are neither safe nor effective, well, that's a threat to national security. That's how they think. It's bizarre.
Yeah.
Well, I just wondered, because they said national security is supposed to be if you have, like, spies infiltrate or such pretext like that. Yeah. I didn't know that was national
security. But here's what they think, though. They think, you know, we think of it as exterior spies infiltrating mm-hmm. the United States. They think that the threats are actually in our borders, that they are United States citizens, people that are law-abiding. They consider those people to be candidates for domestic terrorism. These are threats to the domestic tranquility. And so getting, quote, misinformation or disinformation, in other words, anything they disagree with, putting it on social media, they now are considering that a threat to national security.
Mark, thank you for the call here. Let's go next to Tennessee. Merle, you're on the air.
Yeah, Jim, I don't know if Matt may have touched on this, but I know there was talk about the World Health Organization having climate change lockdowns, including perhaps stopping all Sunday travel. I didn't know if you had heard about that or not.
I have not heard about that particularly, but I've heard people, you know, discuss that. I haven't been able to independently verify it.
Thank you. But certainly travel is going to be impacted, Matt, in one way or another.
No question. Travel will be impacted, whether it's on Sunday or it's not going to be just on Sunday. You know, it would be every day of the week. It will be travel to go to church, travel to work, travel to go out and buy groceries. In fact, if you go look at people like Klaus Schwab, the founder of the World Economic Health Forum, people like Bill Gates, they liked the idea that people were locked down and isolated because you weren't producing carbon emissions, and therefore the carbon mm-hmm. CO2 levels, they say, would come down with people locked down like that.
Thanks for the call. Let's go to Brad. West Dallas, you're on the air.
Hey, Brother Jim. This thing about the one world government and such, there's a lot of people that listen to this show who not only are not saved, but are actually on the other side with this. And Jesus has a warning for them. He was referring to Judas. and I forget the wording, but he said something about evil or evil deeds, such things must needs come. Things have to happen like mm-hmm. that, but woe to him by whom they come.
Yeah.
So if you're involved in this, you know, deep state, lawlessness, one world government and all that garbage, this is a warning for you. People need to wise up, and we need to wise up to what's going on, and you deep state types need to wise up to what where you're going to spend eternity.
Yeah. Indeed, that's the ultimate question. Yeah. Thank you, Brad.
Thank you.
Let me just squeeze in Barb as well. Barb, you're on the air.
Hi, good to speak with you. I wanted to know if anybody's noticed a coincidence that about this monkeypox. In 1958, it originated in labs that were experimenting on mm-hmm. monkeys. And then I noticed in January 21st of this year, there was a accident in Pennsylvania with monkeys. Do you remember that?
And we've only got a minute left here. We did spend quite a bit of time on this topic of monkeypox yesterday with Barbara Lowe Fisher from the National Vaccine Information Center, and would encourage you to go back because we even talked about the meetings and the scenario with this breaking out in May, but time does not permit us to go into that right now. But go to crosstalkamerica.com. You'll catch that interview and a lot of good information that she shared on the issue. Matt Staver with us from Liberty Council. We're just 45 seconds left. What do you want to leave with the listeners as it relates to the WHO, to the new pandemic treaty and so forth?
Well, I think, you know, the good thing is that people speaking up, contacting the members of Congress, it actually did make a difference, not only here, but globally as well. But it's not over. So continue to educate your members of Congress. Don't ever give up. Don't ever give up. Educate your members of the State House as well, and those who are governors in your state. Contact them and tell them to oppose the WHO. Do not cede sovereignty to the World Health Organization. Make sure you continue to do that. And also on this Department of Homeland Security, we need to get Congress to wake up and say, no, we need to defund that. We don't need the government spying on Americans and censoring our message regarding elections, COVID-19, and a host of other things.
LC.org/WHO, and you'll get a lot of information there. Matt, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Jim. Good to be with you.
Matt Staver from Liberty Council, our guest here today. And friends, as it relates to where we are in this world, may it be a wake-up call to believers to occupy until the Lord returns, to go about being salt and be light. Share the good news of the gospel because the time is drawing near. God bless you, folks. Thanks for joining us here today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.